how do we get from Robbinsdale to Glenwood Hills Hospital? My sister was born there. I think lots of people have a story about that hospital. We'd go on field trips there from school when it was Golden Valley Health Center. What I remember was I was out beer can collecting. That was a wonderful way to explore our world when we were little, because we would just head out into the woods and we'd look for beer cans. And we would walk down 26th Avenue, which is the borderline between Robbinsdale and Golden Valley, where I grew up in prestigious South Robbinsdale there. And we get into these little woods where Sahaki Park is, and I think it's called Mary Hills Park in Golden Valley. And we'd walk through there, and just below St. Margaret Mary's Church, there was a car that was wrecked in the woods. And that was where we were sure there was we were going to find beer cans, because if there was a car wrecked in the woods, they must have had beer, and there would be old beer cans around somewhere. And this car was probably from the 1950s. It's still there. And we would walk down the railroad tracks from there, and then we would walk up into Worth Park, and there was a bridge there that crossed the railroad tracks. And the bridge, I remember, had a plate on it that said, you know, this bridge was built in 1927 or something. And my buddy was saying, yeah, just think of the guy who's, he's coming along across this bridge. Maybe he's driving a Model T and he's got a six pack of Cone Tops, probably a Gluck Growlers, because that was the Cone Top beer can we wanted. And he probably tossed them off the side of the bridge because the cops were chasing him. And now we can just go down to the woods and we'll find these old Cone Tops. Well, we would find all sorts of beer cans down there. Punch Tops, you know, before you had a pull tab that you could pull off the top, and Cone Tops and steel beer cans and whatever we could find. And we'd wander through the woods and look for all the places where the kids had their beer parties and find these cans. And then we would end up back at Little Twin Lake, the little beach there. And I remember this guy was sitting there, you know, drinking a great big can of beer. It was a Schlitz malt liquor bowl. And he looked like a strange hippie guy, and he was smoking something. And I said, you know, could I have that can? He's like, well, when I'm done with it, you can have it, kid. And then we went and looked for all the beer cans around in the woods there and came up off the trail. And then we were at this hospital. And I remember my sister was born there. And what do we know about that hospital?
Well, it's a great hospital. So Glenwood Hills Hospital has kind of an interesting story. It is pretty unique for the upper Midwest. Golden Valley developed from the east to the west. So the eastern border is right on the border of Minneapolis. And that's kind of where this hospital gets its start. So there was a man named Raymond T. Raskop, and he was a business administrator at something called the Homewood Hospital in Minneapolis. So he was working at this Homewood Hospital in the 1920s. And he and his first wife, Helen, who was a registered nurse, got interested in mental illness, which is pretty early. You know, even today, there's a lot to learn about mental illness. But in the 1920s, they were really at the beginning of even thinking about how to have more modern approaches to mental illness. And so together, the two of them in 1932 purchased the bankrupt Homewood Hospital. So this hospital in Minneapolis they buy, and they turn that into the first fully chartered psychiatric hospital in the Northwest. Definitely in the state and kind of in the region. So that's about 1933, and we have an old photo of it. It's kind of this big white building, just a pretty basic looking building. And that's how the Raskops get their start. But in 1935, they're looking to expand, so that's when they start looking out towards Theodore Worth Park. They buy this 35-acre property, and that's where the hospital is that you saw, Pete. So they buy that in 1935, and by 1936, they already have two buildings, and they admit their first patient to Glenwood Hills Hospital. Pete, when you were there, did you remember a great big sort of regular looking hospital building and then lots of small houses, kind of little more residential looking units?
Yeah, and one of them was a little bigger than the other ones and it had kind of a red tile roof. There was also a great big house that was built sort of on the island between Sweeney Lake and Twin Lake there.
Yes, and Raskop lived on that sort of peninsula out into the lake. He eventually built sort of a mid-century modern home out on that peninsula. But yeah, so they start developing that property. There's an old painting of it, an oil painting of it originally, showing some of those old buildings. It used to be the Hart's Greenhouse property. They had a nursery there. So we're in the 1930s, and originally, the Raskops just sort of own it. It's their private business. But in 1937, there's a little quote that says, "Under pressure of heavy taxes and with concern for the future growth of Glenwood Hills, Mr. Raskop deemed it wise to give up private ownership of the hospital, and in 1937, it was converted to a charitable trust." So now it's more of a nonprofit sort of structure. And they start putting out advertisements in newspapers. And I just want to read this announcement for their hospital because it really sounds more like a country club. So they've got a picture of their new hospital. It says, announcing Glenwood Hills Hospital, the Northwest's new hospital for the diagnosis, care, and treatment of nervous and mental disorders. And then they have this paragraph, 38 acres of elevated land and hills adjoining Glenwood Park and Twin Lake on Golden Valley Road. Beautiful surroundings, parks and drives, golf grounds, lakes, woods, creeks, country environment affording tobogganing, skiing and skating, or horseback riding. You could go swimming, fishing, ball playing, tennis, and croquet in season. They have new buildings equipped with all the modern facilities. They're fireproof. New detention windows, day rooms and occupational therapy, fireplaces, new hydrotherapy, the latest and most modern in architecture and construction. And food was also a big component of the hospital. So there's this funny line that says, tray and dining room services, an abundance of artesian well water. They're just pitching this beautiful hospital. I mean, it sounds relaxing, like an environment where you'd really want to go to sort of convalesce and maybe regroup and get a new start on life. So they keep going. In the 1940s, now they start a school of nursing. They have a neuropsychiatric school of nursing, which is pretty unique for the 40s. And they keep up with technology. They have their first X-ray film of a psychiatric patient in 1950. And this is all leading up to, by 1957, they're the largest non-governmental hospital meeting the needs of psychiatric patients in the Midwest. So they're this regional psychiatric facility. But then there's a little bit of a change, so now they keep growing. In 1958, they become a full-fledged general hospital. So that's when they opened what would be that big, really hospital-looking building that you would have seen.
Huge. And it went down the back of the hill, so it seemed like it was small when you were up in that parking lot. There was a little circular parking lot there, campus, I guess. And then the backside was this four stories of glass and windows.
Yes, big windows looking out over the lake. They offered all sorts of services, everything from surgical, medical, OBGYN. So you mentioned your sister was born there. A lot of kids were born there. In the 80s, my mom thought about giving birth to me there, but I actually was born in St. Louis Park. They've got this great big new building and this school of nursing. So the School of Practical Nursing was licensed in 1958. And they graduated like 50 to 60 students each year for about 6 years. If you come to the Golden Valley History Museum, we have a great photo of all these nurses lined up on the basketball court. They're wearing their like starched white uniforms. They've got their prim little hats and stockings on. But if you look in front of them, is all their cigarettes that they threw down before the photo was taken. So it's just kind of this funny snapshot of the School of Nursing in 1958.
You have an eye for detail.
This is kind of a story, right? It's just all these really prim and proper ladies after the photo's taken. So they're also building. They continue to build. In 1960, there's a building back on the lake called the Park Building. This is more of a long, low, flat building that's still there today. And that building focused on psychiatric programs, including occupational therapy and recreational therapy. Those were sort of new developments in the treatment of mental health. So that building is back on the lake, and it also had a research laboratory. The research center was established in 1962 under the direction of, I think it's Dr. Goshen, but it looks like Dr. Gokin. I'm not quite sure how to say it, but he worked there for a long time. And they studied mental illness, but also long-term illnesses like cancer and arthritis. And an interesting side note is if anyone's seen the movie Slaughterhouse-Five, they actually filmed part of that in the hospital. They paid $300 to film some scenes in the research laboratory there. So that's kind of unique.
Yeah, well, they filmed a good part of it in Robbinsdale, too. The car chase takes place down Victor Memorial Drive. Now,
all in the neighborhood.
That's right.
Yeah. But in the 60s, you know, Raymond T. Raskoff, he's getting a little older. So in 1964, he retires. And in 1966, they established the Child and Adolescent Psychiatric Unit. It gets its own building. And that's kind of a development because they're starting to recognize that adult mental health is different from children and adolescent mental health. And so that's a big development in the field. They also have a newsletter, Echo of the Hills, I think it's called. And they have a new logo that comes out for the first time in 1969. We have a banner that has a GHH for Glenwood Hills Hospital, 1969.
Do you have any of the newsletters?
We do have the newsletters, yes.
In case I want to read them.
They're in the archives. You can come and check them out. And they've got great photos. So in 1969, they started the music therapy program. And we have a photo of these two folks tuning up ukuleles for their music therapy program. And I like that development because it sort of shows the humanity of trying to bring fun activities to people who might be in a really hard time in their lives. So they start this music therapy program. And in 1970, they have the first music therapy internship in Minnesota. So it's kind of fun. Well, so we're going to kind of get into some business history. Just like today, I think health centers have a lot of administrative and business considerations. So they start to combine. They start to sort of be conglomerates. So in 1970, Glenwood Hills Hospital and the Anoka Community Hospital Association combined. They become something called Health Central, Inc. That also includes Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids, Unity Hospital in Fridley, and they have a division for research and education. So these sort of like local homegrown hospitals can't really make it on their own anymore. They're starting to combine into a big group effort. But Glenwood Hills is still doing some of its own stuff in 1971. They start some construction related to a couple new buildings called Building A and Building C. And if anyone remembers the Courage Center, they break ground on the Courage Center in 1971. It's a little bit of a separate entity, but it's right there at the corner. Now I think it's called the Courage Kenny Rehabilitation Institute. They sort of combined eventually.
Isn't there another one just kind of across the way that's a neurology?
Yes.
Beautiful building.
Yes, there's a neurology building just across from that, and they did win an architecture award for that building. So they were proud of that too. I actually took swimming lessons at the Courage Center when I was a little kid because the pool is nice and warm. That's good for folks with disabilities who want to be in the water, but also good for little kids. So that's where I learned how to swim. And they're doing some other fun stuff. In 1972, they have a garden. They grow things like rhubarb, strawberries, raspberries. They do vegetables like lettuce, beans, peas, radishes, carrots. The patients and the staff can work in the garden. And a little bit more development. They renamed themselves to the Golden Valley Health Center. So Glenwood Hills Hospital became part of that big conglomerate. And then in 73 becomes Golden Valley Health Center.
And they get a wonderful logo with the cattails on it, which I still remember for some reason. Maybe somebody got a jacket or a t-shirt or...
Yeah, the circular logo with these three cattails. And I have a guess in reference to that beautiful lake because they did really have such a pretty campus there. And the 70s are unique. They start to specialize in some areas of healthcare that are a little harder or a little more specialized. They established the Ridgewood Chemical Dependency Program. So they're focusing on rehabilitation services and crisis intervention. They also do an outpatient chemical dependency program. They worked with sexual health for a while too. So really starting to do some pretty cutting edge work, I think, in those areas that were harder for general hospitals to get into. But the 1980s is sort of a whole phase in itself. That conglomerate that was called Healthcare Inc., they started a joint venture with something called CompCare. Then in 86, like half of it gets sold. They merge. There's all this business stuff going on because I think it's hard for the hospitals to do this independently. So in 1988, an investor group led by Steve Camber, who was one of the hospital's top CEOs, he purchased the Golden Valley Health Center for $21 million. So he buys it in 1988, and in 1989, the nurses go on strike. It's not working out very well. They just think the system isn't working. And I think there's a few more years that are kind of troubled, and the Golden Valley Health Center closes in 1992. I think it just sits vacant. I don't know a lot about what happened between 92 and 1995, because it reopened in 1995 as THC, or the Transitional Hospital Corporation. They reopened the hospital. And I think focused on what was called the Park Building, the one in the back by the lake, because it's a beautiful campus, like we said, but those acres in 1996, 92 acres are sold for the Hidden Lakes development, and they do a big housing development there eventually, but not after the community has a lot to say about it. They think it's such a beautiful space that in 1997, almost 500 people sign a petition opposing this development. They really want to keep that natural space. But the development goes through and there's houses there today. And so is the Regency Hospital is in the back. The Minneapolis Clinic of Neurology, I think, is the one along Golden Valley Road. And the Courage Center is now the Kenny Rehabilitation Institute. So that's a quick overview of the hospital, but it is a beautiful property. And I used to go back there when I worked for mosquito control. I'd work back in the woods and along the lake. And Pete, I think you've been back there too.
Oh, I spent lots of time back there. I mean, that was, the woods were big when I was a kid, and that was sort of one of the further places I would go to, but I ended up going there a lot. I remember the little trail, because in order to get to the little hidden beach on Twin Lake, which we'll just call Bear Ass Beach because that's what most people recognize it as, you would cut through the hospital because that was the easiest way to get there. And there was always a grumpy old security guard there that would chase you or tell you you can't be back here. But, you know, when you're on a bicycle and he's walking and there's just this little stretch of land they own. And then once you're on that trail, you're into Worth Park and they don't own that. So, but I remember it was like one of the first times I saw a deer in the city. So I'm coming along that trail on my bike and here's this great big deer, you know, in the trail. And yeah, it's just, there's these two beautiful little lakes, and Twin Lake right behind the hospital was so deep. A nice place to swim because the drop-off, I think it's about 80 feet deep, and the drop-off happens right away. So it's just deep and clear. And I know when they were building that housing development, there was a lot of consternation and city council meetings filled with people that were hoping that they could have that as park or that the lake wouldn't be damaged. They were concerned about the houses being built on the peninsula that was going to mess up the springs that fed the lake. And they were doing all sorts of testing of the water to see if it was going to be okay.
Yeah. And I think you're right. A lot of people did meet back there to swim. So like some good wholesome activities and maybe some other edgier activities. I think it was a hookup spot for a lot of folks. We have some stories about all that.
Yeah, it was very popular among gay men, I think, in the 70s and 80s. Some cruising was going on back there and some other poor behavior. And in general, just people drinking and smoking and a beach that was without a lifeguard or that was unsupervised.
And secluded, like you have to go back through the woods and down a hill. Like it's not the easiest beach to get to.
Yeah, it's a good long walk. Every once in a while, the newspaper would do a story on it. I was collecting clippings for a while there. Going all the way back to the 1970s, you have these people that wanted to have a clothing optional beach. And it certainly was that way when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of interesting because Theodore Worth Park is under the Minneapolis Park Board. The Minneapolis Park District manages that property, even though part of it's in Golden Valley. So it's a weird jurisdiction between Golden Valley Police and the Minneapolis Park Board. They always have to kind of figure out who's in charge of some of these natural spaces.
The police came down often. They had it figured out. It was usually the Golden Valley Police. And they would just go around and write tickets. And some people would scatter and run, but most people would just sit there and collect their ticket and, you know, either pay the whatever fine it was for having an open container of beer or improper attire was the other citation that people would get. Thinking about that area and that property, if you go back into the 1920s, like there wasn't a streetcar line that was going to get you right there. So you might have, it must have even been more secluded then. I mean, there wasn't much out there. The one thing I know was out there is where the fire station is now. There was a little stand that I sold vegetables and I still am looking for a picture of it, but they also sold wild rice there. You know, there was that little lake that was a little further up. That's really just a swamp that was called Rice Lake. And I always thought there must be a connection. So you mentioned a greenhouse. What else was in that area?
I think it was the Hearts Nursery. And then I think they sold that just to become the hospital. So then after the hospital became the housing development. And I think that's really the trajectory because a lot of Golden Valley didn't develop until later. So
the hospital, I remember you would come up this long drive. And there were a couple little pine trees and a great big mowed lawn up to the hospital and huge. They would have Easter egg hunts out on that big lawn. And then you'd come around the corner and you saw and either the new hospital building was built right into the old ones. But what you saw was a circular drive and probably five or six buildings that I'm guessing were built in the 20s or 30s because they had the red tile roofs and their brick buildings. And then the new building on top of that. And then a good-sized parking lot, and then the little Regency building. I visited a number of friends that were getting chemical dependency treatment and stuff back there. And I remember going into that Regency building, and it had these great big windows that, you know, kind of looked down through the trees and the lake, and all those big old oaks were all over those hillsides. I mean, it's still a beautiful area, but they put a lot of houses. That property is unrecognizable.
Yeah, they're really crammed in there. And I was working at Mosquito Control when they were building or updating some of them. Maybe they were putting more in, but yeah, they really crammed them in. I heard from someone who lives there that part of the agreement was if they did this housing development that was that concentrated, the city of Golden Valley wouldn't be responsible for snow removal. The streets are so tight.
Or the roads.
Yeah, that development has to be in charge of their own roads and snow removal.
Have you been out on the peninsula since the development?
I have.
The thing that sticks between the lakes.
I did drive out there. So it's unique. You've got this really crammed in, concentrated housing development, and then this beautiful peninsula with maybe only five big, giant houses. One of them is that mid-century modern home that the Raskop, the administrator.
So they never tore it down.
They never tore it down.
What?
There. Yeah. And you can tell because it looks so different from the ones next to it. They're, you know, great, big, really fancy houses.
Well, that was a beautiful house, too, when it was built, but I suppose it looks small now.
Compared to his neighbors, yeah. And you feel a little weird back there. I guess it's a private, I mean, it's a public road, but it feels private because it's just this one little road that you're going up and down. But it is really pretty back there.
Oh, I want to go drive back there now.
You should. It's a good trip.
And, of course, the beach is still there. Everybody said, well, it's going to ruin. Nobody's going to want to go to the beach. There's just going to be these houses overlooking. And I thought, well, those poor people in their million-dollar homes, they're going to have to look at all these kids. Well, not really kids. It's all these geezers, you know, standing around naked on the beach drinking beer. But I don't think it's quite that way. I think there's some trees that grew up in the way. But the last time I went to that beach, that a bunch of kids had set up a ping pong table. And it was packed. I mean, it was a nice day. So there was just a ton of people. So it's still getting a lot of use. And, you know, the other great thing about going swimming there was you could bring your flotation devices. Whereas most of the city lakes, you're not allowed to, you know, head out there on your raft, but you can, you know, just bring a little raft and go out and lie around in the middle of the lake. And rarely is there anybody to bother you.
It's not really regulated. It does seem mostly like a party spot. I've never really heard a lot of fishing stories. There isn't really access to it for a boat launch or anything.
There would be some fishing. There was always somebody with a canoe and out casting a line. Going by the beach really slowly to see what was
just to check it out,
trying to stay out of the ways of all the people and their floaties as they.
It's so funny. I really hear stories kind of in three categories about this property. One is like the fun at the beach. One is a lot of memories of I was born there or I have a sibling born there. So they're kind of like fun or nostalgic memories. But we do get some harder memories, people who had actually been in the hospital for chemical dependency or other issues. And they often ask how they can access their records or if they had, you know, a family member there. And it can be a little tricky to find. But if anybody out there is wondering, I think the records are with the Abbott Northwestern Hospital. So you can just reach out to them. They would probably be the best place to look for records or give you advice. We don't have medical records at the Golden Valley Historical Society, but we can try to help you find them if it's important for you. Because I think for a lot of the, some of the mental health issues, you know, treatment back then was really hard and they didn't always know what to do. And maybe some of it wasn't so great. I can't comment on, you know, what happened inside the hospital, but I know people had hard memories. And so we're happy to help them think about that and find the history we can. We don't always have a lot to go on. But if anybody has questions, just reach out. We're happy to chat.
People that I visited there, well, they didn't complain, but they were in treatment and they were just happy to have a visitor. And
yeah,
they were teenagers for the most part. And yeah, both at that Regency building and the other building. So this would have been the late 80s. Maybe there were programs in both buildings.
Yeah, I think so. They even did, for a while, they did some work on eating disorders. I interviewed a lady who had worked in the kitchen there, and she had great stories and really fond memories of the hospital. But even she said that treatment has come so far because she remembered when she worked there, there was a time when to treat eating disorders, you would just ask people to eat. The instruction was just to ask them to eat. She said she would have to give these huge plates of food to people who had some hesitancy about eating, and her job was just to stand there and watch them until they ate it. And she said it was so terrible for everyone, and we don't do it that way anymore, but that's what they were doing at the time until they knew better. So there were some, you know, hard treatment stories that people still live with today.
I would stop there when I was beer can collecting or hanging out in the neighborhood or going to that little beach. I would stop there because there was a cafeteria, or not really a cafeteria, I think it's called an automat. You would go in and there would be sandwiches and an apple and a banana or something in this machine, and you'd put a little money in, and then you would slide back a plastic door and you could, you know, grab yourself a snack. For some reason, we would just wander in, and I don't think we went in the main entrance. I think there was an entrance or an exit on the backside of the hill that was open, and we would just, or else we would go in the main entrance and take the elevator down. We knew where this place was, but we would just go in there and grab our soda or our sandwich or something.
Yeah, different times. The lady who worked in the kitchen also talked about when someone gave birth, they would set up a special meal for that person and their partner, and it was like a candlelit dinner. They would have a special, like, catered meal after they had given birth, and she said that's so different from today. You know, you give birth and you're out of there, and back then they could stay for like a week. You'd get a candlelit dinner. It was a whole thing. Yeah. So she just thought a lot about how things had changed.
And of course, we have this story in Robbinsdale of Dr. Samuelson, who started North Memorial Hospital. And I know that at some point, 1950s, I think, he built a house over there on Sweeney Lake. And he had an airplane that he would land on the lake. And so, and I just wonder, did anybody mention any kind of, was there any relationship between those two hospitals that are really 2 miles away from each other?
You know, that is such a great question, because I was just recently at North Memorial, and they had a little history, and someone there had won an award really early on for their work with mental health. And now you make me curious about, were they connected to the Glenwood Hills Hospital, even though they worked at North Memorial, because it was such a unique thing at the time. Was it Dr. Ralph Rossin? So here's just a little snippet from what I read at the hospital. It said that Dr. Ralph Rossin was horrified at the conditions facing the mentally ill, and from the time he took over the hospital, he made many changes. He pioneered the practice of taking patients out of restraints, insisted on one diet for patients and employees alike so that patients didn't get mush while employees ate meat. He believed that each patient needed a major prescription for their needs, and pioneered individualized care within the state hospital setting. Well, that's when he was working at the state hospital in Hastings, but he brought that experience with him when he came to North Memorial. So it seems like there's kind of a concentration there of people working on really difficult situations and trying to find new approaches, more humane approaches.
So people that you've talked to, or people that have come into the Golden Valley Historical Society with memories of this place, what are some of the older memories that, does anybody have a story from the 40s or the 1950s that you can remember?
No, really the earliest we get are short stories like, I was born there. My sister was born there.
Yeah,
I remember there were some like weather events. I think there was maybe a tornado that blew out some windows, or a big snowstorm and they were trying to get to the hospital, things like that. So sort of, you know, happy-go-lucky nostalgic stories.
I don't know how you would have got up that hill unless you had a good snowplow, but...
Yeah.
When it went, it was paved, you know, when the road back there was paved.
Because it was way back in there. You know, you raised such a good point about how did people get there? I don't know.
I understand there's a couple heavy bronze plaques in the basement of the Golden Valley Historical Society that give us the history of the hospital and its founders. Maybe we could finish out by just reading what's on those plaques.
All right. So this is a plaque that we have at the Golden Valley Historical Society. And it says, in memory of Raymond T. Raskup, 1900 to 1979, the Golden Valley Health Center owes a debt of gratitude to its founder and first chief executive officer, Raymond T. Raskup. In 1932, Mr. Raskup and his wife, Helen, purchased the bankrupt Homewood Hospital. They refitted Homewood as a psychiatric hospital and assisted in the establishment of the first neuropsychiatric staff in the Northwest. In 1935, the Raskups acquired the first 35 acres of what is now Golden Valley Health Center and created Glenwood Hills Hospital. Growth and expansion were rapid under Raskup's leadership. In 1941, he opened a neuropsychiatric school of nursing. He organized a cancer research department. The hospital grew to 400 beds and supported two community groups in building Unity Medical Center in Fridley and Mercy Medical Center in Coon Rapids. Raskop was extremely active in Golden Valley's civic affairs. He served as chief of police and as mayor. He helped in developing 38 housing additions in Golden Valley, among them Tyrell Hills, Glen Urban, and Spring Green. In 1951, he received a state certificate of commendation for 25 years of progressive leadership in hospital administration and was cited as an outstanding Minnesota citizen. He was an Optimist Club member for 28 years and was a fourth degree Knight of Columbus. In 1956, he was honored as being chosen by the American Hospital Association to be a part of a special delegation which visited Russia. Raymond T. Raskop is remembered as an energetic and important influence in hospital and community life. His contributions to Golden Valley Health Center are not forgotten. So that was Raymond T. Raskop, and then I would also like to read a plaque commemorating his wife, Helen, who was his key partner in a lot of his business ventures. So this other plaque says, in the loving memory of Helen Swenson Raskop, RN, great leader of modern nursing, co-founder of Homewood and Glenwood Hills Hospital, graduate of Lutheran Deaconess Hospital, North Dakota, 1920, co-organizer of first neuropsychiatric staff in the Northwest, original member of the Board of Trustees of Glenwood Hills Hospital, respected and beloved by nurses, doctors, and patients alike. Her memory will be an inspiration in the great cause for which this hospital now serves. This tribute is erected by her devoted friends. Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Bicycle into the city every Saturday to see our friends. In the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.